December corn futures finished 8 3/4 lower. November beans were down 27 1/4. We have much to talk about. This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Greg Johnson from TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Greg. Thank you for being with us. How are you doing today?
It's a slow day today with the markets down. The phones just don't seem to be ringing like they were last week.
You know what day I did not sell soybeans last week? That's the crop I have to sell, by the way, this year. Do you know which day it wasn't that I didn't sell?
The day that we made a new contract high, probably.
Yeah, it was. It was Friday. I sat there and looked at it, and I thought, and I had, you know, because I had Bossy on the air, and he was bullish. Gulkey sends me things. speaking of which, Gulkey will be on in Kurt Kimmel's place. Congratulations to Kurt for his retirement. So he won't be there next Monday, but we should be able to talk to Jerry about how he views this marketplace. And it should be an interesting conversation. I see some of what he shows up. And honestly, I think that high on Friday had him concerned too. So we'll talk to him about that. But I want to know what you think this crop is really like. I was in, before we get to that, I was in St. Louis yesterday for Susan Stroud's No Bull Ag Conference put on with Bloomberg too. Fantastic day, really. I did not record anything because sometimes I just like to go and sit and try to learn. A lot of the pokes up front were about money flow and movement and how the commodities and ags play on the world stage, which is what I think you're going to talk about today, too, with me just a little bit. And it was so interesting because there's just so much money around the world, and the ag space gets played in. And the basis is not unhooked from it, right, Greg? So it's not that they push so much money in that basis has changed dramatically or unhooked from the marketplace. It's just that it gives volatility, which also offers opportunities on both the up and the downside. So let's start kind of what you think this crop looks like. What do you think today the corn crop in the United States looks like today?
Yep. Every year we say that it's variable, and this year is no exception. With the heavy rains we had early in a lot of places, and now it's starting to turn off dry up in the Dakotas, western Iowa, Nebraska, parts of Minnesota, even parts of Illinois have turned off dry. But yet you can drive 15, 20 miles down the road and see a very good crop. So the bottom line is it's extremely variable. How do you put a number on that? Well, obviously you can't yet. USDA is using a 183 average. And the private models range anywhere from 179, which is 4 bushels below USDA, all the way up to 186. And that was this week. So there's a couple of big outfits that are still at 186, which is 3 bushels above USDA's 183. So the bottom line is nobody knows. We look at crop ratings on a weekly basis. Normally, this time of year, the corn crop is 66% good to excellent. This year, we're at 63%, so we're a little bit below average. That makes me think that maybe we're at 182 for a national yield instead of 183. But again, there's really no correlation between crop ratings on July 27th and the final yield. We've had years where the ratings are much lower than this, and we've had above trend line yields. We basically had above trend line yields just about every year for the last 10 years, except for 1 year. So we just continue to have good crops regardless of the weather, regardless of the ratings. So will this year be different? I guess we'll find out. There's certainly a wide range of opinions on where the final corn and bean yields will end up. So that's why I think that's one reason for the volatility that we've seen thus far.
A couple of things. I know farmers look at and they're thinking, well, this crop doesn't look that good. And they're not wrong. Here in Champaign County, right around where we are, it looks better today than it has all season long. But I drove to St. Louis and back and through Decatur, Springfield on the way down and then through Hayworth on the way back. And it does look ragged in place. And I was thinking to myself, oh, wow. And then I thought, wait, what does a normal crop look like? And when was the last time that we had a pretty rough looking crop or a normal looking crop rather than a great crop? And it's been years, I think, maybe since that was really the case. And so it's just we'll have to wait and see what USDA does with the crop production report, I suppose, to get that first August 1 number. Now, the thing I think that is in the marketplace, it has been China a couple of different ways on the way up. That might have been because China was trying to make sure the Strait of Hormuz was open, and then tariffs stepped in, and the market's really kind of terrified at this point, apparently, about what that means for agriculture in the United States.
That's good. I like that. The markets are terrified of the tariffs. That's good. The Section 301 tariff that President Trump is talking about has got some traders concerned that these other countries, both friend and enemies, will retaliate by putting tariffs on our products. And of course, the main thing that we export is agriculture related. So China especially, the rumor today is that China will not fulfill their commitment to buy 25 million metric tons of soybeans by the end of the year, calendar year. I've kind of wondered all along if that wouldn't be more of a commodity year type thing instead of a calendar year, even though the U.S. says it's a calendar year thing, but we've not seen the actual agreement or the memo of understanding or whatever you call it between the U.S. and China. So
there's a sticky note in the Oval Office somewhere.
Exactly. So today the skepticism is out, and that's why beans are down double digits today. Fearing that China will not buy that 25 million metric tons, which is 900 million bushels, which is roughly half of our total world export. So it's a very important question, and that uncertainty has got the markets down today. Plus, the forecast has changed a little bit. If you believe the weather forecasters, it looks like the Dakotas, at least South Dakota and Minnesota, Iowa, are going to start getting some rain mid to late next week, and that obviously would help to some extent. But as we all know, forecasts can change from day to day. But that's the forecast that we're working with today.
Anything else we ought to be watching in this marketplace today, or things that are coming up that will change the market? I know we have, of course, the crop production numbers in the month of August.
Well, I still think we have to keep an eye on the big picture. If we grow 95.3 million acres of corn and have a 182 yield, that's a 15.9 billion bushel production. Demand is 16.2. So we cut into the carryout by 300 million, and that gets your carryout from 1.8 to 1.5. So we really can't afford to have a below average crop without some kind of price rationing involved. Same way on the soybeans, 85.4 million. If you take that with a 52 bushel yield instead of 53, just one bushel lower, that cuts into the carryout by about 150 million bushels and takes the carryout down from 310 to 160, which is also extremely tight. So we're not out of the woods yet. We need to have some rain in August to finish out this crop. I think that's something to keep an eye on. I understand the wide range of opinions, and I think it probably just kind of boils down to profitability. If we could make money at $5 corn, $12 beans, and $7 wheat, we probably should sell some there. And that's not predicting that the prices are going to go, that's the high. We very well could go higher than that, I suppose. But, we have to start thinking about profitability and locking in profits, because we do know that while those prices are good, it wasn't, but not even a year ago, that we had sub $4 corn, sub $10 beans, and sub $5 wheat. So prices can go lower, they can go higher. But if you can make a profit, probably not a bad idea to lock in some profits.
No, I was just hoping that this week's been profit taking, but maybe I'm wrong. We'll see. Hey, thank you much. We'll talk to you later. We appreciate it, Greg.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Stay with us. We'll hear from Josh Linville of StoneX about the fertilizer outlook in just a few minutes. Let's go back to the USDA report released on Monday that I was not able to give you on Tuesday afternoon, the weekly crop progress report, particularly some of the state anomalies. But we'll start with the national overview. 78% of the corn crop was silking around the nation Monday, running ahead of the five-year average of 74%. 25% of the corn crop was in the dough stage, and it was rated 63% good to excellent. 80% of the soybeans nationally were blooming on Monday. 47% were setting pods. That second number, by the way, is well ahead of the five-year average of 39%. The national soybean condition rated 63% good to excellent. Now, here are some of the statewide differences from the historical averages. In general, the upper Midwest and northern plain states are ahead of schedule. For instance, Minnesota corn, 87% silked. That's 17 points ahead of the five-year average. A quarter of that crop, by the way, has reached the dough stage, about twice the usual number. 61% of the soybeans in Minnesota are setting pods. The five-year average, 38%. In South Dakota, kind of the same. Corn silking reached 78%, coming in 17 points ahead of average. Soybeans blooming at 78%, well ahead of the 62% average. North Dakota soybeans setting pods, 46%, outpacing the 29% average by 17 points. Corn silking ahead at 57% compared to the 46% average in North Dakota. Now, here are the important states related to corn: Illinois, Iowa, and Nebraska. In Iowa, the number one corn-producing state, while corn and soybeans were generally tracking close to normal, corn silking is moderately ahead at 87% versus the 80% average. Illinois, too, about normal. Illinois corn silking actually slightly behind at 86% compared to 88%. And in Nebraska, corn and soybean development in that state are right on their historical averages. Now let's turn your attention, as I have done each week during the month of July, to the Crop Protection Network. That's at cropprotectionnetwork.org. This is operated by the plant pathologist across the nation. It tracks diseases in major crops. We're going to talk about corn today, and rather than using the tool we've been discussing, I want to turn to the crop risk tool. Again, that's at cropprotectionnetwork.org and the crop risk tool. The crop risk tool assesses the weather and then the risk of the development of diseases. For instance, today we'll go through tar spot at the beginning of the month of July, actually the end of the month of June. Here in Urbana, the assessment was that there was a high risk for tar spot development at 35%. However, today, if you do not have tar spot in your field right now, there is a 3% risk, very low, that it will develop things. Same thing, of course, goes for Champagne. I checked other places too. Crawfordsville today at 4%. It was very high in the beginning of the month at 50%. Now again, if you've not got it, 4%. Is the opportunity for the development of tar spot. In Terre Haute, Indiana, 2%. It's never really been very high. A 21% or moderate risk early in the month of July. Kankakee, Illinois, a 58% chance that tar spot would have developed. That was at the end of June. Today, that number is 6%. It does do some prediction as well. So if you go out to August 2nd, it ups to 12%. So you should probably watch and keep scouting in that area. Springfield, Illinois, today, just 1% chance that tar spot will develop. It's really only ever had a moderate risk to begin with at 21% at the beginning of the month. Galesburg, Illinois, 42% at the beginning of the month. Today, just a 3% risk. And DeKalb, this is where things change. In northern Illinois, at the very beginning of the month, end of June, on the 29th of that month, in fact, there was a 76% chance that tar spot might develop in those fields. That continued to drop right through the 4th of July weekend down to 40%. And then by the 19th day of July was 15% and has gone as low as 6% back up to 8% on this date, July the 29th. And the increases actually in northern Illinois through the 4th day of August to 17% near DeKalb. So that is the crop risk tool. It assesses what the probability of development of tar spot might be in your field. You should be using it before you ever put a plane in the air. I hope you check it out at CropProtectionNetwork.org. I know you've been thinking about your fall fertilizer programs, and I have two things for you today. Both are related to phosphate rather than anhydrous ammonia or nitrogen and its availability. Earlier in the week, Cesar Delgado, a colleague of mine from Ottawa, Illinois, and a member of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, sent me an interview that he had done with Josh Linville at StoneX. I pulled a soundbite of Josh talking about his biggest worry for the fall. Again, he's mostly worried about phosphate rather than the availability of nitrogen.
I have a lot of concerns in terms of the phosphate market. And it, truly, when I look around the world, the phosphate market is being impacted far more than everything we're seeing on nitrogen. Of course, nitrogen is what gets all the attention, but phosphate's getting hurt significantly worse. And if our demand was normal, I would be petrified of what this coming fall is going to look like. However, I think the demand destruction is going to be immense. I think you're going to see a lot of farmers who are going to look at their soil test and say, you know what, I've got really good levels. I can reduce my application rate. I can skip it all together this fall, winter, spring cycle. Or I'm a fall applicant. I can wait till spring and I can see if this whole thing corrects. So at this point, I'm telling folks, I think demand destruction this fall is going to be 50% from normal, not last couple of years, but from normal rates. And I'm saying 50% because I'm not brave enough to say the higher numbers I really think it's going to be. And I think that helps to balance the demand loss is going to help balance what we've lost on the supply side. So I'm not as concerned there. I will say my biggest concern is if we get to fall or we get close to fall, maybe there's a change of heart by the farmers and they decide they're going to go ahead and apply last minute and supplies aren't there. Maybe the grain price will continue to go up and suddenly people are like, well, it didn't make sense, but now with corn at whatever price it makes sense, I'm going to go ahead and start applying it. All that to say, any last-minute demand surges, that's what really worries me.
Josh Linville is with StoneX. As it happens, one of the crop scientists, Andrew Margonaut from the University of Illinois, has written about phosphate and its potential need and how farmers should be thinking about it this fall for the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. At the end of this month of July, Drew, I'd like to take some time to think about what the weather has been like, particularly in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt. It seems to me, based off of crop progress reports, some of the differences in how far along that crop is, it's really ahead. Could be either a maker or a breaker, either one, depending on, you know, are they ahead because they're just got planted so early, which I think they did, and or are they ahead because the weather's been so bad? So the question comes down, have you been thinking about this very much at all?
Yes, I have, and because that seems to be the question that's on everybody's mind right now is that, you know, the news media and certainly the images of data that are out there and about, they, you know, pretty impressive heat wave, right? I mean, we saw temperatures to 115 in Montana 2 or 3 weeks ago, 114 last weekend in South Dakota. And, you know, when all those images are presented to us, we have to immediately think, oh, my gosh, then a crop's got to be dead. So I did an assessment on that these last couple of days. And a couple of things that stood out to me. The first thing was that all of the temperatures that were 100 degrees or above that were really extremely hot and stressful for crops was actually to the west of most of the key corn and soybean producing areas. We saw 90s in some of the corn and bean country, but it wasn't the extremes. We were up there, but anyway, the point that I also want to make is that in early July, we had plenty of moisture on the ground and in the ground in the northwestern Corn Belt on the first day of July. By July 14th, the topsoil had firmed up, but the subsoil was still in good shape. Without the 100-degree temperatures in key corn and soybean-producing areas of the eastern Dakotas and Minnesota, or even in neighboring areas of Iowa and Nebraska, the crop was hanging in there fairly well. Stressed, yes, but huge production losses, probably not. Now, the second half of July came along, and we went a lot drier. I should point out, too, that eastern South Dakota and west central and southwest Minnesota had a very heavy rain event just before we got involved with the hottest and driest weather. So those areas were right away, you know, in better shape to handle the whole thing. Now, when we got into the second half of July and it did get hotter, it was also drier. So those last 2 weeks of the month were certainly more punishing for crops, especially those that were already low on moisture in the soil. But when you look at the subsoil moisture assessment for the 14th of July and then on the 28th of July, the change was not that dramatic. I would say maybe 25% of the corn and bean country that's so important in the northwestern Corn Belt actually was to the point where the subsoil moisture was low enough that the crops should have been stressed enough that they were either shutting down or losing some yield potential. But now, tomorrow and Friday, we've got a rain event coming into those areas. And it's going to be 1 to 2 inches. It's not going to be enough to fix the moisture deficits. But for a crop that has only been seriously stressed for 2 weeks at the most, I'm not quite sure that we've really lost that much. And much of this is going to be determined by what happens over these next couple of weeks. Well, our August outlook suggests more of the same, where there's going to be some timely rain, but below normal, and that the temperatures are going to bounce around a bunch. So I'm thinking that the soybean crop in particular is probably doing all right. It's stressed, it needs moisture, and it's going to get some. So I think it'll be turning around a little bit. And the corn, and we probably have shaved some yield off, but when you stop and look at the whole of the Midwest from eastern Minnesota and eastern or even central and eastern Iowa down into eastern and central Missouri, eastward, all of those areas are in fairly good shape moisture-wise. And it's only those far northwestern areas, and maybe just 25% of that has been notably stressed in the last 2 weeks. I really don't think we've hurt this crop that bad.
Yeah. I suppose the point is, I don't hear from Iowa farmers or Minnesota farmers when they're quiet. That means things aren't too terribly bad.
That's a good point, yes. And really, when you look at this, I think it's probably a little bit more of a spring wheat and canola issue, because it was far more stressful for Montana and the western parts of the Dakotas up into Alberta and Saskatchewan, rather than key corn and soybean producing areas.
Hey, thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week.
You bet.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason.